Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, thank you for joining us on this week's episode of The Tripe Supper. It's myself, Dom Shaw, and Craig Johns here. No Andrew Musgrove, who's on a week off. Although I noticed this week he'd been nominated for a Digital Journalism Award, so I hope he's not getting too big for his boots again.
Yeah, big time now, too big for Tripe Supper, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know yet, but I've presumed the awards for the podcast.
For this podcast,
yeah, he hasn't said it, but you'd think so.
Yeah, we'll take the credit, mate.
How are you doing anyway, Craig? Relaxed after your week in Devon?
Yeah, all good. Just about recovering. It was a busy week down there, but it was excellent. Nice to be down there. Michel mentioned many times the heat down there and everything. It made for a nice week in terms of any kind of off time you got. I was hitting the beach as me. I'm not going to get abroad this summer, so get on the beach. And didn't think I'd ever say that at 7 o'clock on a night I'd be in the sea in England. But there you have it. But obviously the trip for Middlesbrough was designed around building fitness for the new season. They had three friendlies while they were down there, and also some really tough training in, as I say, what was very, very hot conditions. It was almost like when, you talk about in pre-season going abroad for this warm weather training, but they didn't need to go abroad for it this summer. They had it down there, and I imagine there was some very tough sessions down there, and really productive week for Borough down there. I think as well as that fitness, there was also plenty of team bonding, the famous Neil Warnock barbecue, and there was a Diego Carton for them. I'm sure things were coming together nicely following that week down there.
I laughed at York in midweek. So I was at York on Tuesday night, and all the club staff were well tanned. They looked like they'd had a week in Spain or Greece, never mind a week down in Cornwall. You can tell who'd been down there and who hadn't, who'd had to stay at Rockley. Where do we stand then, do you think? So we're recording this ahead of Borough's game against Rotherham on Friday night. You might be listening after the game. But we've got a week or so to go now until the new season. Bulk of pre-season's underway. A bulk of pre-season's been played. Where do Borough stand, both on the pitch and in terms of transfers? We'll get the transfers in depth later in the pod. But just as a wrap-up, what's your take on how the summer's gone?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, as you say, without going too in-depth yet into transfers, I think we're seeing a kind of solid 11 starting to form. And I know there's still part of that, like at York City, for example, Johnny Howson was coming in for his first game. We haven't seen Mark Bowler yet in the side, who he'll obviously slot in and become part of that strongest 11. But I think we are starting to see a strong 11 with a clear vision and a clear kind of tactical formation that would be preferred, kind of building, forming and developing within that squad. I think the big issue last season and certainly still the case now, I think, is that depth. I mean, you were at York, so I'll let you kind of talk about York in more depth. But for me, watching from home, he obviously rested and took precautions with Duncan Watmore and Marcus Tavernier. And to me, Borough, really, really missed both and just didn't look the same attacking threat that they had all week in Devon without those two players. And to me, that speaks volumes about, the depth that they're still missing and that they still need.
Yeah, that was the left side's obviously an issue that needs addressing, isn't it? But everyone knows that. Jed Spence had to play there in midweek, and Colton and Bowler won't be available, or as things stand, they're not available, not expected to be available next week at Fulham. So they obviously need someone down that side, and we know that they're looking at Kieran Brown, and Keane Bryan's another one who's been heavily linked. He's a free agent. But I completely agree, and you know, with Sammy Amiobi, uncertainty over Sammy Amiobi's injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out. Warnock said on Tuesday when he was asked that he's struggling, but he didn't put a date on how long he'd be out. But he, even if, and my guess, just kind of, you know, the vibe I'm getting, my guess is he's not going to be available next week. Even if he was, he hasn't had a pre-season. He hasn't played a game. He hasn't been away. So it's been so frustrating for Amiobi. But completely agree with what you're saying there. If you take Tavernier and Watmore out, I like Crooks from what I've seen, that one game in the Plymouth stream. I like Crooks playing advanced and looking to run beyond and work off Ikpeazu. I think that'll work really well. But you're still short in that area, aren't you?
Yeah.
I think you need a couple of attacking midfielders. Regardless of what shape you're going to play, really. I mean, even, you know, if you play wing back, if you play the 3-4-3, 3-5-2, whatever you want to call it, then your wing backs need to provide the width, obviously. But then have they got the players to make that work? I think I was saying to the lads at York this week, I think with that 3-4-3 shape, I like the spine of the team. I really like the spine of the team. It's just down the flanks, isn't it, at the minute where you obviously Borough are short. And as much as Bowler was excellent last season, I do think Bowler's more of a left back than a left wing back. And that sounds daft, really, because I know he's played there in the past. He's played as a winger. And so he's certainly comfortable going forward. But I just think he looks more comfortable in a back four, really, than with wing backs. But yeah, there is work to do. I think Warnock's pleased with what he's got done so far. But really, he needs a couple in the next week, doesn't he? Especially a left side.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just going back to what you were saying about Bowler there and being a left back, I think the signs of that being the case on the right hand side as well with Anthony Dykesdale. I think playing in that formation with Dykesdale as a wing back on the right hand side probably works in your games like Norwich away last season, where he played a five. He played a three-man, like three centre-backs, but it almost was a five because the wing-backs weren't, you know, getting forward, weren't asked to get forward as much. And I think against York, where, and against Championship teams, where if you play that formation, the emphasis might be on the wing-backs, as you say, to get forward and provide that width. There were just signs at times that Dykesdale wasn't as kind of familiar with the role, familiar with the position, and he was perhaps caught out a few times where he was maybe too advanced or not advanced enough. And, you know, I mean, I guess he can learn that as time goes on, learn that role a bit more, because as we say, Burr tended to go to a three last season, and if Dykesdale was at wing back, it would be as a five more than a three. So, yeah, this season, if they are playing that, I think there'll be a lot more times where the emphasis is more on attack and more on the wing-backs providing that attack. But I do wonder if Dykesdale, like Bowler, is more of a right-back rather than a right-wing-back. But I suppose with their, I mean, there's still doubts and speculation over his future as well, but that role seems more suited to Jed Spence, the right wing back role. So perhaps, you know, as you said, he had to go over to the left to cover on Tuesday at York, but perhaps they've already got that. They're maybe, you know, it's maybe asking a bit too much given what they also need elsewhere in the squad to find another right wing back as well. They've probably already got that in Spence if they want to keep him. But yeah, I do question whether, you know, Dykesdale still has work to do in terms of learning that wing back role if they are attacking. But yeah, of course. I mean, the other thing with that is, you know, after York, you spoke to Warnock, and he made clear, didn't he, that you know, if that was an actual game, if that was an actual competitive game, he'd have probably been changing the formation after 5 minutes anyway, because you know, it was clear that wasn't the right balance for that game.
Yeah, he spoke a lot to you about this, didn't he, in Devon? He wanted that test. He likes what he's seen going forward, I think, especially when you've got Tavernier and Watmore in. And, you know, I really like those two buzzing off Ikpeazu as well as Crooks as well. But obviously he wanted the test at the other end, and York provided that. I know that might sound a bit daft of a National League North team, but they played some cracking stuff.
Fast it well, didn't they? And yeah, really did. Fast as well. They were a fast moving team.
Yeah, they looked really sharp, and they've had a good pre-season. I think they've drawn with Sunderland and beat Newcastle.
That's right.
Can you get odds on National League North promotion? If you can, I might have the double.
I've never looked into it, funnily enough.
Probably a good thing. probably the type of thing where I'd think, yeah, has he got an issue if he's gambling in the National League North? I think Warnock took positives the other night. He took positives from the fact that the team did get that test. Johnny Howson got his first hour of saw under his belt, which is obviously a big plus. Isaiah Jones from the bench looked really sharp. You know, Warnock said afterwards he's still got to work on his final product, which he has, but he keeps it simple, doesn't he? He doesn't really complicate it. He gets the ball and uses his speed to get past players. I've heard from a couple of people separately, kind of off the record this summer, on just how impressed they were with Jones's spell up at Queen of the South before it was unfortunately disrupted by injury. And again, this summer, you know, all, and I know it's the same with you, all I've heard is good things about Jones and Jeremy Civi. Now, we know we're not going to expect too much too soon. And, you know, you can't go into a new season expecting kind of untried and inexperienced players like that to step up. But they are both a bit of a wild card option, aren't they? And I think the other plus for me in the last couple of games is how quickly Matt Crooks has taken to life at Borough. I thought he was very good at Plymouth, considering he'd signed, you know, less than 12 hours before. And again, at York, he's imposing, he's physical. You can't miss him, can you? And I say that having pulled him behind him in the car park and strolled in behind him. Yeah, he's a big towering physical presence. I think he's looked good. I really like the look of him.
Yeah, it was interesting watching him at Plymouth because I'd spoken to Paul Davies at the Rotherham Advertiser the day before the Plymouth game to kind of get an idea of what he's like and do the expert view on him. And you know, and everything Paul was saying was the opposite of what you'd have in your mind of a player that looked like Crooks did. He's obviously, as you see, he's 6'5", isn't he? He's a big, imposing fella. But then Paul was talking about how, you know, he gets the ball, he's underrated with the ball at his feet, he drives at teams, and he was telling us about, you know, how much pace he's got. There was the brilliant story about the mile trial that Rotherham now do. Apparently it's quite a big thing in Rotherham at the start of pre-season since Paul Warren's been there. It's they run this mile on the first day of pre-season, and it's a grueling mile as well. It's not like, I mean, Dom's big into his athletics. I don't know how long it would stand and take you to run a mile on a track, but this is not a track, it's on grass, and there's bits that are uphill, bits that are downhill. And he was telling us that, you know, nobody has ever broken 5 minutes doing that. This summer, Matt Crooks broke 5 minutes and became the first person ever to do it. Paul was telling us all this and how athletic he is, how good at running he is, and what an engine he's got. And then you saw that come into practice at Plymouth. He kind of played that, you know, the interesting kind of midfield dynamic that they've had going on in pre-season in that 4-3-3, where they've been a bit more expansive by having just the one anchoring midfielder and then letting the second midfielder push on and almost make that forward line of four. And Crooks played that role where he was asked to drive forward. And I thought it was noticeable in the kind of first five or so minutes at Plymouth that he was still dropping a bit too deep in terms of what Warnock wanted. And he did. He shouted on to Crooks and kind of told him, you know, get further up. I don't want you dropping deeper and helping Morsi out. And so he did. He drove Burrow on. And, of course, you know, a couple of minutes later, 15 minutes into the game, he scored. And you could see all throughout that game, you know, he has pace to burn. And he really does, like, drive Burrow forward in that midfield. And, you know, he could be a real, you know, Warnock, I think he put 10 to 15 goals on him before he signed him, didn't he? Kind of said he thinks he could get that much. I think that might be a bit of an ask, but I think he can certainly contribute in terms of also assists, you know, about 15 goals next season, because from that midfield, he really does look the player who can, you know, drive Burrow on. And we said it many times last season, they kind of sorted out at the back. They had this stability at the back. Okay, they did concede a few sloppy goals every now and then, but they were solid at the back in general. And where they just struggled was with that link between the two. They never quite managed, unless teams, you know, came really far forward and played a really high line that allowed them to transition quickly and get in behind. They never really had the link between defence and attack. And I think Crooks has got all the attributes to kind of be that man and do that role. Really impressive.
Did I read 4:48 he'd run for that mile?
I think something like that rings a bell, yeah.
Yeah, get him in the Borough 10K.
Yeah. New challenge for you, Tom, is it?
Beat the Borough player. it'd be good that. I remember when, during lockdown, when, there was the stoppage last year, and obviously players were keeping fit, and football players were posting their 5K times on Strava and stuff. And it was causing quite the stir in the athletics world as to whether these times that some of them were running were genuine. I'm sure Ross Barkley posted one. I can't remember what the time was, but it was obscene. What he'd run, and you're thinking, that can't be right.
Ross Barkley as well, he doesn't ever kind of, spring to mind when you think of footballers who'd have that kind of engine that we're talking about with Matt Crooks. You don't initially think, oh, Ross Barkley for kind of, the engine and running.
No, he's certainly not a Martin Darroon or N'Golo Kante type figure. On the goals thing, it was interesting that Matt Crooks, 10 to 15 goals, and then Warnock said in midweek that, sorry, I'm just getting distracted by the Olympics football that's on in front of me there. Warnock said in midweek that he wants, for him, his centre-half should be getting him 5 or 6 goals after Dale's goal, which was an excellent header from a brilliant McNair cross. And you completely get that, don't you? Fry and Hall should be going to town, really, when you consider McNair's deliveries. Then we know that he wants, double figures from Tavernier and Watmore. You can sense, can't you? That obviously Ikpeazu, who's going to be the main man up front. We know that they want at least one more striker, probably two. But the onus on getting the goals this year isn't just going to be on those centre forwards. It has to come from all over, doesn't it? Even Morsi and Johnny House and whoever in the middle, he'll want them to chip in with 3 or 4, won't he?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the likes of Morsi and Housen can be just almost sitting back a bit. And certainly Morsi, I mean, you saw more of Housen over the years. I never really saw any signs of it last season. But certainly Morsi, there were signs that, if the ball drops out, headed out from a set piece or what have you, he's got the quality on the ball to ping one back in from the edge of the box. And you're absolutely right. I think those goals will be shared this season. What I've liked about Ikpeazu in pre-season so far, he does the unselfish centre-forward work, but he's got underrated skills with his feet. I've said this a couple of times watching him. He doesn't beat a man, one-on-one with skill or anything like that. It's just pure raw strength. He can just go past them and just, nudge them off with his shoulder. He's got a nice little ping on him, particularly I've noticed his left foot. He's got a decent little curling finish with his left foot. So I expect him to ping a few in like that. I think he scored exactly like that for Wickham against Borough, didn't he, on January 2nd? I'm sure that was exactly how he scored against Borough. I've noticed that he does that a lot, and he looks good doing that. He doesn't mind a shot at all if he gets into a decent enough area. But I think, like you see, Watmore and Tavernier in particular could really, really thrive off playing off him, because he does do the unselfish centre-forward work really well. And particularly Watmore, I noticed a little partnership brewing there, and I asked Watmore about it when I spoke to him after the Tavistock game last Wednesday. And, he's excited about it. We know Watmore can finish. He came in, not quite halfway through, but late on last season and still managed 10th. And that was, at times, he was playing as the centre forward himself. And we know, looking at Duncan physically, he's not the kind of centre forward that Warnock would typically like in his team, but he still managed 10 goals. I think next season, if you can get Watmore playing as close to Ikpeazu as often as possible, feeding off his little flicks and things like that, I think Watmore could absolutely thrive next season. And I think he definitely could, improve on that 10 goals and get at least 15.
Well, I think the thing with Watmore is that there are a number of factors to consider. One, he didn't have a pre-season last year, which we know that you spoke to him about that last week. He hasn't had a full pre-season for a few years. So he's going to be sharper than he's ever been before. Last year he came into a team. I know he was desperate to prove a point, so obviously found that extra couple of percent. But he came into a team and had no time really to adjust, to get his head around how they were playing and what his role would be. And then thirdly, late in the season, Warnock talked, didn't he, about how grateful he was for Watmore just doing a job selflessly in various different positions. He'd almost dropped into to playing as a midfielder at times at the back end of last season. Then we saw him play as the out-and-out striker. So I think, you know, consider how impressive he was last year. And then when you consider those factors, I think, you know, keep him fit. And it goes without saying he's going to be a vital player this year. And for me, I think it's highlighted every time that Tavernier was missing last season and in the summer. You know, he's Borough's most important player. I think he's the man who makes it happen. He's the link-up man. He can provide that spark, pick that pass. I think, you know, keeping Tavernier on the pitch, we saw it in the second half of last season, didn't we, when he was injured, just how much Borough missed him. You know, if he stays fit, then I think for me he's going to be one of the Championship standout players this coming season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that you know, that dynamic that they've had up top when they've been playing 3-4-3 has been really interesting, because they've almost given Tavernier this kind of free roaming role, where it's clear that, you know, he's just told to just float about in there and go anywhere, pick up the ball, look to get on the ball and look to make things happen, where it's clear Duncan Watmore's kind of role is more, as we say, trying to run in behind, trying to anticipate the flicks of Ikpeazu and doing that. And it's interesting the way they've kind of found that balance between the three of them already. It was noticeable in the first game down in Devon last week against Saltash. They played a more standard 4-3-3, and Watmore was wide left, Tavernier was wide right. And Tavernier was bright. Watmore was bright in patches, but not as good as he was in the next two games. And it was interesting that they were very wide that day. They didn't get as close enough to Ikpeazu as they needed to. And after the second game against Tavistock, where Watmore got two, I asked Warnock about Watmore and his kind of partnership with Ikpeazu as well. And he kind of noted that, you know, Watmore hadn't enjoyed Monday night as much, where he'd been out wide and he hadn't been as close. And partly that was down to the fact that in the midfield, Borough didn't manage to find the balls in behind for Watmore to attack. I think if you're going to play with width in that way in a 4-3-3, you need to find a way to get the ball in the channels in behind for the likes of you Watmore to run onto. I think even next season when they go 4-3-3, I think it could almost look like a really kind of, what's the weird word, like fluid 4-4-2 almost, because 4-3-3 with Tavernier technically right and Watmore left could quite easily become Watmore very close to Ikpeazu almost as a striker, and Tavernier just roaming all over in a free roll behind. So while on paper it looks like 4-3-3, it could be very interesting, and it wouldn't surprise me to see that being utilised more, because I think those three are already starting to show, you know, the capabilities of forming a really good little trio up top for Borough there.
What would be interesting, I think, is Ikpeazu, you know, and he's shown in the summer that he, you know, will start the season as the number one striker, and rightly so. But the concern when he went off injured in midweek at York highlighted just how short Borough are. I know, obviously, Chuba Akpom's there, but, you know, Akpom's future's probably uncertain at the minute, given you know, the reports that have emerged over the course of the summer. And is, you know, we know that his first season didn't go to plan. It'll be interesting what type of striker or strikers Warnock brings in to compete for the place with Ikpeazu. We know that obviously Rodrigo Muniz and all that's going on there, and really there's no point in us giving us an update on here now, because by the time we finished it, it'll have changed. Every it's by the hour. I don't know whether these South American journalists are paid by tweet, but it's by the hour, isn't it? There's an update. My latest understanding as of Thursday night was that Flamengo liked Borough's offer. They liked the idea of this percentage of a future sale. But Fulham at that point had only made a loan offer, and Flamengo weren't interested in a loan offer. They wanted a permanent offer. And obviously it was down to the player to negotiate as well. Apparently he previously rejected a move to Genk a couple of months ago. But then I wake up on Friday morning and conflicting reports have emerged already. So it's an interesting one, that, isn't it? We'll ask Warnock about that one again on Friday night. But if you were to say, you know, we know that they're looking at a South American striker or two potentially South American strikers. But I still think he'll look for another tried and tested player as well up front. Because if not, you know, you're taking a gamble, aren't you? Only having one striker potentially, who knows the division. And then the other interesting one, and I think obviously this is one for us to ask Warnock, it's gone quiet over the summer, is last year, at the back end of last season, he did talk, didn't he, about this Premier League loanee that he was interested in. And he'd held talks with, I think, the player's representative, or he might have even said the player's dad.
I think he did.
I remember rightly, yeah. That one's gone quiet. I wonder who that is, what you know, whether a young Premier League striker might come in. Purely speculative, but I do think it's interesting how the whole striker target update latest plays out in the coming weeks.
Yeah, well, obviously the obvious one to kind of speculate on there, and again, important to stress it is just speculation, but they have been linked with that Delap at Manchester City, and of course, you know, I'm sure over the years, you know, Warner came across his dad playing for Stoke and whatnot, and it is interesting that the latest reports coming out of that one is that Liam, who's in Manchester's academy, you know, favours a move to Stoke. You do wonder if that's who Warnock was alluding to when he was going to speak to Delap about his son, and you know, maybe, you know, favouring Stoke has something to do with his dad's career and his dad playing obviously many years at Stoke and knowing that club inside out. You know, again, that's purely speculation. We have no inside information on that one, but yeah, there was very exciting noises about that Delap and what he's like as a player and what he could be capable of. I think, you know, if you were signing Ikpeazu, a South American, as you say, you do kind of wonder, does that leave you with enough kind of championship nous? But then you would think, you know, Warnock said, you know, he doesn't worry about the South Americans in terms of, you know, physically competing because they're born to do that. And, you know, so you think if you have the two strikers like that, then a young Premier League striker like a Delap, although if he favours Stoke, as is the kind of speculation at the moment, then maybe not Delap, but someone like Delap. You know, that gives you three solid centre-forward options. And, you know, I think that would be interesting. It's a risk because, as you see, you know, the South American, whoever the South American ends up being, you know, might not take to life in the Championship. So you have to take a risk. But, you know, that's what you have to do. There's nothing saying that you go and sign a proven Championship striker. You've done that plenty of times. They did that with Brittas Ambolonga, and it didn't work out when he got to Borough. Okay, you'd like to think this summer the kind of way the target and scout a player will be a lot better suited to what they actually need. But there's no guarantees with any transfer. A player, you know, as we're seeing with Sami Hamiobi now, a player can come in and get injured very early in their career and that doesn't quite work out. Obviously, I'm not saying it's not going to work out overall for Sami Hamiobi, but at the moment he was brought in to do something very specific for Borough, and at the minute he's not able to do it. He's not being able to get up to match fitness. He's not being able to integrate into the squad because he wasn't down in Devon. And so, you know, that's just the point that, no matter who you sign, there's no guarantees with any transfer. Any transfer is a risk in that sense.
And it should, you know, we should point out that we shouldn't write Tubar Akpom off. He's still at the club. And while, you know, there has been a lot of speculation over his future, as things stand, he's still at the club. And if Ikpeazu isn't fit to play, then Akpom would be the obvious man to lead the line. Though it was interesting that Warnock went out of his way a couple of times on Tuesday to praise Josh Coburn and his movement and how sharp he looked. It was the first look we've got at Coburn. He had COVID over the summer, which you know, thankfully he was fine and he's up to speed now. But really frustrating for him because, you know, he'll have been absolutely on a high at the end of last season, won't he? Desperate to go. So obviously that stopped him in his tracks, but he did look sharp when he came on. His movement was really good. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Coburn this summer, this season, because last year Warnock suggested, didn't he, that he'd rather keep him at the club and keep a close eye on him than send him out on loan. But then obviously things change, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Same too with Civi and Jones. I know we talked about them earlier, but Warnock said that they've already had a few League Two clubs on asking about Jones, which I'm not one bit surprised about. They wouldn't struggle to get a suitor for Civi if they decided that he should go out on loan. But at the minute, you can't risk letting these players go because you're so short in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think perhaps for Jones at this stage, particularly if Borough can bring in one more kind of, you know, winger or attacker, it's probably a good move for Jones to go out on loan. With Coburn and Civi, it's slightly different. I can understand the thinking in that the pair of them are only 18 year old and they are still very young. And of course, with any loan move, particularly if it's far enough and ultimately, unless it's perhaps a Hartlepool who are now in League Two, with any loan, you're moving away from home as well, and you're probably going to be for the first time in your life, you know, living without family or parents around you. And that's a big thing as well. You know, we often just talk about footballers in the sense of what happens on the pitch, but, you know, what happens on off the pitch as well and away from the game can sometimes be just as important to what happens on the pitch. And so I think particularly with Coburn and Civi, who, as I say, are just 18-year-old. I mean, Civi's slightly different because, of course, he's a London lad and he's come down to Borough anyway. I don't know his family situation, but obviously he's not a Borough lad, so he wouldn't have initially been here. So he's moved away from home anyway, being here. But I think, you know, at that age, I can understand the thinking in not sending them out somewhere unfamiliar and keeping them around the club, even if they're not going to play that much for the first team, that could be playing for the under-23s while training with the first team. And I think someone, for example, like Josh Coburn, being training with the first team this season, he can pick up and learn so much from watching an Nick Piezu. You know, if down the line he's going to model a lot of his game on that kind of centre-forward player, then just watching what Ikpeazu does and watching how he conducts himself and how he trains and what he does to stay in the shape that he stays in. You know, I think that could be just as valuable as sending Josh on loan to a club where, you know, with all due respect, wherever it is, the coaching probably won't be as good, the facilities won't be as good. So I can understand the thinking in that, in not sending Coburn, even if they do out on loan, even if they do get another two strikers. The concern is, and Warnock did obviously allude to this at the end of last season when he kind of came in and he scored the goal and he made a big impression. And I, if I remember rightly, I think it was Mark Drury on BBC Tees who kind of said, could that potentially save you some money in the summer transfer window? And Warnock shut that down quickly and it was a no with a laugh. It was quite clear that he didn't want Coburn to be, you know, that guy that meant he didn't have to go out and sign a couple of strikers this summer. The worry is that if he does only manage to get one more in, then Coburn's significance increases quite a lot because effectively he does have to become Borough's third choice centre forward. Perhaps it is a bit too early for him, but sometimes, you know, it's sink or swim. And, he swam last season when he was brought in against Sheffield Wednesday and scored that brilliant goal. And as you say, against York, he did. He looked sharp. He looked impressive. There was that one moment where the ball was kind of played in towards him and he turned his man into the box, used his strength and tried to lay it across goal. I can't remember who was in at the back post, but, you know, it was unfortunately cut out. But it was brilliant centre-forward play, the type of stuff that we see Ikpeazu do. So, I wouldn't be overly concerned if Josh Coburn had to play that third choice role next season. But I think ideally you'd want to kind of take that pressure off him a bit and get another two strikers in.
Just a quick stoppage to remind you to like and subscribe on the pod, on the channels, wherever you get your podcasts. And also a reminder, you might have seen on our social media channels that we've been plugging our 40-page pre-season supplement that myself and Craig have worked on. You've still got time to sign up for that. If you go on the Teesside Live and the Borough page, you'll see down the right-hand panel how you can sign up, and it'll only cost you £1.25, I think it is, for postage and packaging, which I'm bound to say that, but I think that's money well spent. So yeah, sign up for that. It's you've still got, I think you've got until the end of the weekend, start of next week. I will double check that, but yeah, do sign up, and you can get it delivered, 40-page supplement delivered through your door in time for the new season, which is soon rolling round. Just a quick one, Craig. Lewis Wing left this week, Sheffield Wednesday, season long loan. Asked Neil Warnock about him afterwards, and he said that, you know, this it definitely isn't the end for Wing at Borough. Borough do have an option to extend his current contract is due to expire next summer. Borough have an option to extend that. You'd imagine they'd activate that, and then come next summer, you've got two options. You can either cash in, or if he's impressed, as I'd expect him to at Wednesday in League One, then he comes back and tries to force his way back into the team. But it was no surprise to see him go this summer, was it?
No, not really. I mean, quite unfortunate, really, because I think, you know, in the first two games down in Devon, albeit Saltash and Tavistock, you have to, you know, to kind of take into context the opponents. But I think he was absolutely the best player in both of those games. He kind of almost played a Tavernier role in both games. You know, that kind of free roaming role with the task of getting on the ball and getting Burr in behind. And I thought he made Burr tick in both games when he was on the pitch. I thought he was brilliant, and he scored in both as well. You know, so I think he then obviously got the knock at the end of Tavistock, and that meant he couldn't play against Plymouth, which was unfortunate for him. And, you know, I think watching that, you could have perhaps thought, oh, you know, maybe he's given himself a chance here. But I think with Matt Crooks arriving, and hopefully Piero soon to be arriving, now that Argentina are at the Olympics as well, you know, that depth in midfield has been added to. And I think ultimately, you know, that just Lewis Wing looks at that and appreciates that he's down the pecking order. He clearly isn't as trusted by Warnock as he'd like to be. And so, you know, just getting out and playing, that suits him down to the ground.
Yeah, I you know, there was a few asking or questioning why he hadn't gone to a championship club, and you know, no doubt the championship clubs will be interested. But I completely get the Sheffield Wednesday move. Big club, you know, they'll be challenging at the top end of League One this year. And he can be a key man there. You know, he's not having to uproot his family completely. I gather he's got a little one on the way, so it's it makes sense off the pitch as well. And I wish him all the best. Following Wing's story over the last 3 or 4 years has been brilliant. You know, he was Ron Bone's last signing, which, you know, it's some signing really and some legacy. One of numerous dozens and dozens and dozens of fantastic signings Bone made over the years. But I remember, and I tweeted about this week, I remember Tony Pulis was saying that we were over in a press conference, and he'd been away on loan at Yeovil, and he'd impressed there. I think he might have played against Man United in a cup game. I'm sure they played United in a cup tie. Anyway, he'd impressed there, and he came back, and they'd set up a kind of a pre-season training game down on the Rockcliffe pitches with kind of fringe players, young lads, and Woodgate was a coach at the time, and he was down there, and Pulis went down to watch. And he said he'd watched 5 or 10 minutes, and he turned to Woodgate and said of Wing, you know, he's in my plans for next season. He's not going out again. I want him to be part of it. And that at times the next season, although Borough competed for a lot of it at the top end of the table, it was a grind to watch at times. You know, it was a hard watch. But Wing was a fearless breath of fresh air, really, that year. He was positive. We know from watching him that he'd have a crack on goal whenever he got the opportunity. I remember going to an MFC Foundation event and interviewing him there, and he was still pinching himself. You could tell at the whole thing that was happening. You know, he is a lad who was playing for Shildon a year or two earlier, and now he was at a charity event, stood alongside John Obi Mikel. So you can understand why he was kind of, you know, hard to get his head around things. But he was so human then when you talked to him. You know, he was talking about when he worked his night shifts in the shower factory, and then he'd go and play on the Saturday. He was saying that he's still in touch with all the lads we played Northern League with and Sunday League. And whenever he had the Sunday off, he'd go down and watch and then go in the club with them afterwards and you know, catch up with all his mates and tell them how his dad was a massive Borough fan and he's living his dad's dream. And now his dad was able to go and watch Borough and his son on a Saturday, whereas before he was having to split his time between Borough and his son. And I don't think he's ever had that knocked out of him by the professional game, that kind of rawness, I guess. And I think it's really great to see that not all footballers have to take the orthodox career path of kind of coming through the academy. There are some that get missed, aren't there? Luke Armstrong's another, really. I spoke to him earlier in the summer, he had his ups and downs, was released a few times, bounced around on trials all over the place. And it'd be so easy for those players just to knock it on the head, to start working in 9 to 5, to get in the boozers on the Friday and Saturday night with their mates and to play Sunday league, on half cut at times at the weekend. But I think it's fantastic when those players kind of don't let the dreams die and they get another chance. And I think Wing's story is inspirational to plenty.
Yeah, brilliant story. And as you say, wish him the best. And it's an interesting avenue and one that Borough haven't, kind of given up looking at as well. If you look at, Jeremy Sivvy is the perfect example. He was...
Isaiah Jones, Sam Fulham in the 20. I think it's a market the Borough have looked at and done really well out of the last few years.
Yeah, I know they're picking these lads up where they're still young and they can still get them in young enough. But nevertheless, the players who... I don't want to say a bit missed because, in Civi's case, for example, he wasn't missed. He was at Leighton Orient. They decided to release him. He started playing non-league with Harlow Town, if I remember correctly. And then even Charlton gave him a trial and said no, but Burr have picked him up and looked like they've got a real talent on the hands. And as you see, Jones, Falarin coming from non-league clubs. It's an interesting avenue and one that, Burr seem to be profiting from.
Well, I was having a chat with Craig Little at Bishop Auckland when Borough played there, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but when he was saying that when Borough, at the end of Civi's trial, when they told him that he was offering him a deal, he's never seen a player as happy to be offered a deal, and there's clearly so much desire and hunger there, and he's taken that into the summer, hasn't he? And caught the eye from nowhere, really. I think obviously not those at the club because they have eyes on what we don't, obviously. But if I'd have been asked at the start of the summer to name three or four players who could emerge over the course of the summer, then Sivvy probably wouldn't have been one of them. I didn't know much about him other than the fact he'd just signed. So again, that's another one. And Jones and Falarin. I remember talking to their coaches at... But yeah, I can't think of the name of the club where they came through. It wasn't. No. I'll double check. But I remember talking to their coach, last season, and the pride that he took. He was saying that their job was obviously to win games on a Saturday, but also to produce players who could make the step up. And, He's not bothered if he's losing his best players because they're going to make a fantastic career for themselves. And there was three or four examples. I think Mikel Antonio came through there and he's kind of the shining light. But there was another lad who Charlton had signed the year earlier. Then obviously Jones and Falarin. And he talked about the Borough link up and how, closely he was working with Borough. Even for the likes of Falarin and Jones, if it doesn't work out at Borough, but if they go elsewhere and make a career for themselves, then that's job done for the academy coaches. Absolutely. They've created a footballer, haven't they? And they might not create someone for the Borough first team, but they've created a professional footballer for somewhere. It's absolutely job done.
Yeah, Tootin and Mitchell it was.
That's it, yeah.
I knew it was one of the Ands, having watched Ludo.
Yeah, you got one of them right.
Yeah.
You got the Ands right.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Before we wrap up, then, kind of sum up the summer. What have been your main takeaways from the summer, Craig? Having seen Borough at Devon, obviously, and the couple of other games, Bishop and York, what have been the main takeaways for you?
I think two main ones. I think one thing we didn't see a lot last season because of various fitness issues was Borough player with Dale Fry, Paddy McNair and Grant Hall all in a three. I'd have to look, but I would imagine it was very, very few times that the three of them all played together. And okay, I appreciate the opposition hasn't been opposition that has, always tested them. But I think, there's the framework there of another really solid defensive season with those three at the back. We already kind of knew that, but just seeing them there together again, that's really reassuring. But I think now as well, The other main takeaway for me is now they've got that centre forward, that type of centre forward that Warnock always wanted in Ikpeazu. Things are looking a lot better at the other end of the pitch as well. But as long as they've got you know, the right players playing off him, I think, you know, as we said at York on Tuesday night, the badly missed Watmore and Tavernier. Patterson, Jamie Patterson was obviously on trial, but in two kind of 45-minute appearances, he's not done much for me. But, you know, we'll see. We know he's had a bit of an ankle injury, so let's not write him off completely yet. But certainly, you know, Watmore and Tavernier play off Ikpeazu. That looks a much better attack. And then you look at, you know, the likes of Matt Crooks and perhaps hopefully Pajero when he comes in, you know, another a midfielder who's going to link up and drive into that final third to add to that attack is potentially a lot more exciting than what we did manage to see last season. But yeah, I think as well, just the, you know, still the lack of depth as well, I think, as because as I mentioned, when you take someone like Watmore and Tavernier out, the miss, they still haven't got that depth, and so they miss players when they're not there. And that was the key thing at the start of the summer that Warwick said absolutely has to be addressed. He needs, when someone drops out, he needs someone to come in straight away and replace them. So that depth's definitely still needed.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Craig. That'll wrap us up. That'll wrap us up for this week's pod. We'll be back next week with a full season preview, joined by soon to be award winning Andrew Musgrove, I would imagine, if he's back next week. Thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe the pod. As I said, remember you can still sign up for our 40-page bumper season preview. Just go to the Borough homepage on Teesside Live for more information on that. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up next week.